bust it.
Two back on the Fan. BT and Sal here. Brandon Tierney, Sal Licata Show, 888-808-1019. This is a move for all the felda.
Oh, I can picture you breakdancing it. Yeah.
I love this stupid music from back in the day, right? This isn't Tone Loc. Who is this? This is, why am I forgetting his name? Who is this?
Young MC.
Young MC, that's right. Young MC. All right, so we'll get back to the Robert Saleh calls here. We'll do Yankees in a little bit. And let's get to the Saleh, Reddick, Jets triangle here. So, first of all, I think there's, I think a lot of people, well, at least for me, people are missing the mark. Reddick has no leverage. I understand.
I mean, you said that early on. I kind of disagreed with that. The Jets need him, too.
Well, I'm not saying that the Jets have, you know, over, right. Like, I'm not saying that they're in a great spot. But to me, you got to look at, you know, what he's looking for. He wants Bosa money at $34.5 million. I got news for you, Reddick. There's no chance you're getting it. I don't begrudge you for chasing money, but you're not getting that money. You're just not. He's going to be 30 next week, all right? So when the season's, again, not old, but he's not like 25, 26. He's 30, and he's not getting the money from the Jets that he thinks he's getting. So, okay, so now what's the recourse here? Well, you keep sitting out and you get, you know, fined. I think it's $50,000 a day, some exorbitant right. amount. And you just hemorrhage money. And eventually, he's going to look at his bank account and say, all right, too much of that has evaporated. I got to stick my tail between my legs and go and play for the Jets. So I think that that's what's still going to happen. Jets aren't trading him. But to me, it's less sound about leverage and about the other stuff. And it's more about Joe Douglas making a colossal mistake, even though he can correct it. But it doesn't mean that we absolve him for trading for somebody without any sort of signed stuff. Well, parameters, what are you doing?
How can he correct it?
Well, he can correct it by converting some non-guaranteed money to guaranteed money, I think, which would be enough to appease Reddick to get him in to stop him from being fined. Well, so I do think he'll eventually play for the Jets this year.
Well, then, right, okay. The only way that it could be corrected is if Reddick decides to play for the Jets.
Correct.
And if I'm Reddick, because there are many sides to this, as you said, if I'm Reddick, I wouldn't want to be in the situation, period, although he'd be fine. But the point is the agent's telling him to sit out. He's losing money. Like, you get to a point where you're losing money, you might as well just keep sitting out and say, well, screw it. I've dug my line in the sand here, drawn my line in the sand, dug in. I'm holding out. Pay me. Like, I don't think it goes, okay, well, I'm going to hold out and lose however, you know.
Well, it's been $50,000 a day for 21 days already.
So do the math on
that.
That's
over $2 million, dude.
So if I've already lost $2 million, I'm going to say, all right, well, I'm just going to sit out the season and lose the money. Like,
so you're going to lose 15?
Well, I mean,
it's not like he's got quarterback money.
If you've already lost $2 million.
I'd rather lose two than 14.
But you either, to me, I guess the point is you either show up and get paid and go about it the right way, or if you're going to sit out, you sit out. You don't halfway it.
Yeah, but here's why he can't sit out, and here's why he won't sit out.
But
and
he's doing it. He is sitting out.
But I mean, when it's time to play ball, eventually he's going to show up. Because if he sits out for the whole season, guess what? The Jets retain his rights. And you know what they do? They do the same thing next year. I won't play. That's fine. Oh, so next year you'll be 31. Oh, well, how much did you lose last year with $14 million? Right, fantastic. You're going to lose. He's never going. If the Jets don't blink, meaning they don't acquiesce with a trade, which they will not, there's no chance they're doing that. Hassan Reddick has nowhere to go but the field.
Now, I give Joe Douglas credit in that aspect where he's not going to cave. This is his strength. But, yeah, you're right. He created this mess. Why would he bring in a guy and take him on his word? Oh, yeah, you'll be fine playing under the contract. Like, doesn't make any sense. He traded for a guy that he knew wanted to get paid and he thought that the guy was just going to play ball because he listened to what Reddick had to say? I mean, come on. You know, ultimately, they want to get paid. Douglas got played. Joe Douglas got played by Reddick and his agent. That's what got him here. It's why the Eagles were smarter than the Jets. They dumped Reddick. They got rid of a problem to Joe Douglas and the Jets, and now the Jets have a problem on their hands. Like, no matter what, who you want to blame, how you want to paint it, it's a problem because they're one of their premier pass rushers that they acquired in the offseason to be a part of this great defense is not here. He's not playing.
And not only did the Eagles rid themselves of a problem, but they brought in a solution, which used to be the Jets player in Price Huff.
It's a mess. So
messy.
I know people giving Joe Douglas, you know, some flowers for all
flowers.
Well, as far as saying, well, he's not trading. You know, good for Joe Douglas. He's not going to trade him. He's not going to. Yeah, but he created this mess.
Yeah.
Yeah. He brought him in here. Like, this is an issue.
But at least he's got the hammer to resolve it. He definitely did.
I don't know, BT.
He was a little too trusting. He was too when you say you don't know, what do you mean
I don't know? Frederick's going to play ball here.
Then he's never going to play ball again because the Jets will always retain his rights because it just keeps getting punted down the road.
But the Jets still lose.
Well, ultimately, they still don't lose. Yeah, yes, they...
But they want the player.
But he loses more. Who loses more? You know, a 30-year-old... The Jets, by losing a 30-year-old elite pass rusher who would make that defense maybe from really good to great, I'm not saying it wouldn't hurt the Jets, or the 30-year-old pass rusher who's got a 2 or 3 year window to make real money, just punts forever, and doesn't make the money.
Now let me ask you. Let me ask you, because I don't know. I'm not in these rooms. I'm not an agent, certainly. Don't you think that the agent thought this through? Like, he had to have thought this through. And said, okay, well, this is what's going to happen. They're not going to trade us. Like, they're not, there's no way the Jets would do that. And they know they want, you know, us, we're talking about the agent and Reddick here, to play. We want to get paid. We're going to sit out. Now, be prepared because it's not going to be easy losing $50,000 a day. It could get ugly, but this is our strategy. Like, there's no way the agent just said, oh, we're going to hold out a few days, lose some money, and they're going to, and think that everything's going to be okay. They're going to give us the contract that we want. He had to. If he didn't, he should be fired immediately. He had to think long term that this was a realistic possibility and plan for Reddick potentially missing a season.
Well, I mean, I've got news for that's an outstanding point. And I'll tell you exactly what I think happened here. I'm very happy you brought that up. Not every agent is good. So, I by no means am I demeaning his agent. I'm making that statement. Not every agent gets a winning deal for their clients,
correct,
as we know, right?
Just facts. Yeah.
Okay. So, I believe that Hassan Reddick's agent went through a gross miscalculation and said to himself and Reddick, hey, listen, we got these guys by the short ones. Their head coach is about to get fired if he doesn't win. Their general manager's hanging by a thread. They just let, you know, a kid who's a couple of years younger than you, who's really good, go to the team that you were just on. And they have no choice but to basically, I don't know, bend over and do whatever we want them to do.
Right.
And guess what? They're not. Right. That was a miscalculation and a bad read by Reddick's camp.
Okay.
That's what I believe happened.
Okay. Now, if that is the case, Reddick needs to then
he's got to step up and intervene.
Sooner or later, what are we doing here?
He will.
And then he's going to fire the agent and go play ball and hope that he can recoup the money that he's lost, because at the very least, you can't lose $2 million.
You know what he's going to do that? When... You know, I don't stick my beak in other people's family bed. I say this as a generalization, but when the wife starts to wonder, like, honey, why are we losing all this money? Like, eventually there's a bottom line. there's checkpoints that we all have to go through. Like, why are you spending this? Or do we really have money for the vacation? Or do we really need this extra car? Or do we need a $500 bag? Like, all those things that we all deal with, right? As human beings that don't have unlimited supplies of money. And while he's in a very good financial spot based on what he's made so far, he's not set forever if he didn't invest properly and if he leaves $50 million on the table for the next couple of years, which if he doesn't play, he will.
Let's take this a step further. Let's assume that is the case. And again, we're assuming. I don't know. That's your best guess. I still believe that he's going to sit out long term just because I feel like once you dig in, you better be prepared and you have better been. Otherwise, it's a major mistake and miscalculation, as you said, by the agent. Let's say that is the case, though, and then Reddick decides, okay, fire the agent. I'm coming back. I'm playing. Don't you think that there's going to be some ill will or him harboring resentment toward the Jets? And I don't know if that's going to impact his play because he still ultimately wants to go out there and do well so he can get paid.
Yep. And I do think he's a good guy. I don't think it's going to be like C.J. Mosley, you know, Quentin Williams, those guys will, you know, D.J. Reed. I think the Jets have a very stable locker room. Tyron Smith, nah, not worried about that.
No ramifications.
Plus, I think he's a dog on Sundays and he wants to get paid. And the way he's getting paid is by going out and getting 15 sacks. For a team that could win the Super Bowl or get there.
Yeah, I mean, it seems logical from what the Jets are saying. Like, hey, we'll pay you. You just got to go out there and prove it. Go do it for a year. And that makes sense. It, you know, go out and play. Do what you do and we'll pay you. But once you decide to sit out like that, it just doesn't make any sense. Other than sitting out and making... Like, it can't just be, oh, let's sit out and fool them for a week or two. That doesn't make any sense.
Unless you misread the room and you think you have cards you don't have, which is what I think that they did.
Okay, well, we'll see.
I can't prove it. Yeah. But let's face it, everybody in the football community knows that there is a high level of vulnerability within the Jets building right now. Coaching stability, GM stability, owners getting restless, Rodgers is 40. You got to win. And when people who are motivated to make money, when that scent begins to hit their nostrils, they're like, I got you, but you don't. They misread it.
I mean, and now Douglas may draw his line, and he drew his line in the sand. He's not trading him. And I believe that. I don't believe that Joe Douglas is going to acquiesce at this point. Now, he's made his line in the sand very clear. I'll live this season without him if I have to, and we're not trading him. So, tough, which is good for Joe Douglas. But, man, I just don't. The Jets created this problem to begin with, and it is a problem because even if Joe Douglas wins in this regard, that means that Reddick is not playing unless Reddick accepts that, you know, him and his agent took a big L and shows up.
That would be a big one. 888-808-1019. BT and Sal here on the Fan. Brandon, Tierney, Sal, the Cotter. So let's get back to the calls, the Salva stuff, the Reddick stuff as well. Adam in South Jersey, Yankee stuff coming up next. Adam, what's happening?
What's up, guys?
Yo.
Good to hear you guys as always. Thank you for taking the call.
Got it.
Real quick on the Reddick thing, I think everybody screwed this one up. I think that, you know, Douglas obviously took a risk on grabbing Reddick, making the trade. And I think the agent thought the Jets were desperate and would give him a contract. And Reddick did tell people that he was going to play. And now he's reneged probably because his agent told him, nah, they're desperate. Don't worry. Everybody's on the hook here. They have to sign you.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not going to. So unless he's prepared to ruin his career, ask Le'Veon Bell how that works out.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to work out for him. So that's quick on the Reddick stuff. Now on the Salah stuff. Unfortunately, I like Salah. But you find out about a coach when things are bad, not when things are good. When things are good, everybody looks good. Everything moves smooth. There's no adversity. It's like an oiled machine. But when things go bad is when you find out what a coach is made of, how his disciplinary structure is. I'll give you a couple quick examples. Don Shula went from Bob Greasy to Don Strzok and David Woodley and figured it out.
Can you give us some from this century, for goodness sake? You got to go back to Don Shula and Greasy? I mean, how old are you, Adam?
Get out the leather helmets.
I'm not that old, but I'm a football junkie, Sal. Come on. Give me
I get it.
I'll give you Bill Parcells one.
There you go.
From 1982. Yeah, that's a lot more recent.
Right, all right, so he loses Sims, right? And Parcells tightens the screws and figures it out.
Hostetler.
Ground pound team and sits on his defense. So really good coaches, when things go bad, is when they shine. It's when you find out who they are. My hope this year is that Salah just doesn't get in the way, guys.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't see him changing to the point to where his whole personality is going to change.
No, I got you, Adam. That's not enough. Hold on. We got to elevate the floor a little bit here. What did Jordan say? The ceiling is the floor. The floor is the ceiling. When he was tipsy at the Carolina game, he got the whole expression backwards. But at least, I'm not even worried about Salah's ceiling right now. Honestly, I'm worried about his floor. And his floor's got to be elevated a little bit where I don't need him to be some amazing all-time asset, okay? He can't get in the way. And we can't have such a minimal expectation for, well, just stay out of the way, coach.
Yeah.
Like, that's wrong. What I mean, when I say that he's got to at least do a few baseline things better, and I said that last hour, like, he's got to hold players accountable the way you would do it in the year 2024.
Right.
You're not going to light anybody up or blister anybody necessarily on the sidelines because he's got no equity and he's still a youngish coach. It's not like he's 65 and can do whatever he wants, like Belichick, who's 70, whatever he is. It's different. I understand that. But we can't sit here and say, all right, you know, just clap on that defense and that's it. You got to do more than that. You have to do more than that.
Yeah.
I think he's prepared to this year.
The idea that you would have a head coach that you say, well, just don't get in the way. What? No, the head coach is supposed to be an asset, not just an asset, the asset along with the quarterback. Head coach, quarterback. That's how this league is built. That's how you have success. So it can't just be, oh, we need to win in spite of Robert Saleh. That says all you need to say. Get out of the way and hope for the best. No, you could win games like that. You can, with a talented roster, you can stumble into the postseason like that. You cannot attain the ultimate success. And by the way, we are looking at this very short-sighted. And I understand this is just 1 year, going in with Aaron Rodgers, year 40, and final year potentially of Robert Saleh. But ultimately, don't you want to achieve, especially the Jets, sustained success?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Okay, in the
it
way
sounds you, like you're talking about the Mets right now, because that's what you say about the Mets. I get it, of course.
But the way you do that is to not go chase a 40-year-old quarterback and tell the head coach to get the hell out of the way. The way you do that is to hire a real head coach that builds the program and can develop a quarterback and have success, even if he doesn't have the best quarterback. Now, I know that's another conversation here because we're in this isolated 1 year, but if Salah is not the guy, it's going to set them back years, even if they do have some success this year with Rodgers.
God, I can't even right now entertain where would they go, who do they turn to. I just think the Jets are going to win a lot of games this year, and I'll get to the other stuff if they don't when I have to.
And if they do, that means Salah's going to be back next year.
For sure.
Okay.
All right, so the Parcells reference and the Dolphins reference, right? So let me just read you something. Try to guess what coach this is. You ready?
Okay, yeah.
0-11-1, 4-9-1, 5-8-1. Oh, a lot of ties. 4-10-0, 5-8-1, 7-7. So the first 6 years, that's what this future Hall of Fame coach did. You want to take a guess as to who it is? You should know. A ballpark, you know, guess, like, you know, direction would be, think about it, 13 games, 14 games, so not quite 16 or certainly 17.
Right.
You want to play the game or you want me to just tell you?
Yeah, go ahead.
Tom Landry.
Okay.
That was Tom Landry. He went winless in his first year.
You brought that up before,
and
I think.
One.
Yeah.
And I know the game's different and the concepts are different and the world is different and the modern athlete is different. Understood. And the establishment of power is different. Coaching methodology is different. All right. You can't make guys run in the heat for 2 hours without getting a drink of water like you did back then. But there are many examples, Joe Torre's another one, amongst others, that just didn't have the horses early.
All right.
Then they got the horses, and then they figured things out.
But there's got to be some kind of sign.
Okay, but what was the sign when Tom Landry was 0-11-1? There was none.
I don't know. I wasn't watching it. But I do believe, like, if you were to ask me this about Todd Bowles, I would tell you that I think that there are signs that Todd Bowles, and I said this at the time in real time, that there are signs that I believe Todd Bowles can be a good head coach.
Do you remember what they were specifically? Because he did win 10 games his first year, by the way.
I thought, and he's had some success with Tampa, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
But I felt like he was in control. He was a head coach. Even keel, even demeanor, no-nonsense guy. Yeah, hold guys accountable. Like, those signs were there. And then you look at, look at the quarterbacks that he had to deal with. Look at the franchise and how they set him up. Did they set him up to succeed?
Which I wish we had Fitzpatrick last year.
Okay.
Or at least that kind of production.
Yeah, but
I know what you mean.
Year, and then
I know
after
what you
that,
mean. I know what you mean.
But so point is, at least there were some signs that I thought were he could be a good head coach in another situation.
I thought so, too.
And with Salah, outside of today's interview, I really haven't seen it. Mm. But, you know, pre-Jets head coach, with the Niners, you look at him as a defensive coordinator, you say, wow, look at that guy. You know, then you listen to the opening press conference and you believe in that. Today's interview with Boomer and Geo, taking some accountability and looking deep from within and learning from mistakes, all those things are good. But on game day for three straight seasons, and then, you know, even in during the week of game, you know, the weeks in between games, I just haven't seen it from Robert Saleh to really believe that all of a sudden he's going to figure it out.
All right, 11:20 on the Fan. BT and Sal here. Back to you. Calls 888-808-1019. What in the world happened in Chicago? So, again, end of the world, no. You play 162 games. It's not that big a deal. But there was definitely a couple of warning signs last night that could creep into October. That's got to worry you a little bit. We'll flush through it. BT and Sal on the Fan.
Annoy people on the quiet car and call the Fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
All right. Hey, Fanatics Fest NYC is taking over the Javits Center coming up on August 16th through the 18th right now. Call the number 10, 866-540-WFAN, and we'll get you in the building. And it is one big building with a ton of cool stuff going on. We'll be out there as well doing our show, so come by and say hi with us or hang with us. 866-540-9326. That's your chance to win. And we'll hook you up with a four-pack of tickets. Be part of the first ever immersive sports fan festival at Fanatics Fest. All from our friends at Fanatics Live. Visit FanaticsFest.com for the full athletic lineup. It's going to be a lot of fun. I cannot wait to get there. They got all sorts of stuff. I mean, oh my God, it's going to be absolutely bonkers.
There's a huge list of things here. We were talking about it yesterday. So I'm looking forward to being there Friday and Saturday.
little home run derby,
yeah,
a 40-yard dash, a little enter the ring like an old WWE superhero.
You're all about that.
I might
have
to do it.
NHL target practice, penalty kick. I mean, it's going to be incredible. I can't just wait to see the layout.
I know.
All the talk about it, and, you know, looking at the website and looking at the sheets of info that we have, the layout is going to be incredible at the Javits Center.
What about a little BT and Sal Olympics there? Maybe we take three or four different things and we see how it shakes out.
All right.
What
I mean, give them the digital content that they want.
Yes.
How do you think how do you think you would fare?
Depending upon what we do, I think I'd do very well. Anything with running, I'd probably give you that with the running.
I'm not good. Seven things here. The 40-yard dash.
I'd give that to you.
Home run derby.
Me.
UFC striking challenge.
Me.
Test your knockout power on the same. Okay. WWE superstar entrance.
I think we'd both be good at that.
NHL target practice.
Me. I played more hockey. I played more hockey in the street growing up. I did. I couldn't skate, but I could shoot a little bit.
I don't know about that. I've been practicing with my nephew.
Oh, that's right. Joey is sharpened. You see, maybe I got a battle on my hands with that one. What else?
I think that would be a fair battle.
Okay.
NBA Cup experience. Oh, no, that's not a challenge. Penalty kick challenge. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Yeah, I'm not good at that.
Yeah. I mean, I barely enjoy watching the kids play soccer. Nah, I'm just kidding. Soccer's not my sport. But kicking, flip a coin.
I think I'd go out of the six. Yeah. I think I'd probably get you.
Two?
No.
More?
I'd probably go 4-2.
Wait. So what would you beat me in?
40-yard dash.
Okay, I'll give you that.
The superstar entrance.
Okay.
Target practice.
All right. But the fourth one, you're just making something up.
No.
What?
I think you'd choke in the home run derby.
Get the hell
the
out
pressure
of here.
Being the favorite, you'd be like, you know, maybe Alonzo.
unlike Pete, I compartmentalize pressure to contract you a little bit more. Nah, I'm just kidding. That's going to be a lot of fun.
Should do something like that. That will be fun.
We will mess around. We'll digitalize it all for you. We'll be out there on Friday. Evan and Tiki will be out there as well. All right. Very quickly on the Yankees. Listen, I mean, I think the easy thing to do would be get on the air and say, oh, my God, the White Sox, they're on pace to shatter the Mets record for futility. How do you lose a game like that? They're still professional baseball players, so I don't want to go nuts about it. But
are they? The White Sox?
I mean, barely.
Oh, yeah. Well, all kidding aside, we joke around how bad they are. They are like going to be the worst team in the history of the sport.
I know they are. And every single batter, maybe two of which I actually know, when they get up, it's like batting average 212, 213, 201, 198. I mean, they are a fairly wretched group. I mean, I'm not going to lie to you. Although I like those uniforms. Yeah. I was saying, I think they were pretty cool.
I like that stadium, too. You ever been there?
I have not.
I've been to
the outside of it.
Okay.
I've driven past it. You've actually seen a game there?
I've been there once. Yeah. No. Who the hell did I see? I forget, but it was... Oh, I was going to say it was the same trip I saw the Yankees in Kansas City, but that was a different trip. But no, I saw the White Sox.
Pretty decent.
Might have been the Yankees. Yeah, I liked that. I thought it was cool. It's unique. You know, they get those pinwheels out in center field.
Yeah,
it was cool. Okay. Nothing special, nothing to it.
I got you.
But it was cool to see the White Sox stadium.
Well, I mean, when it opened up, I mean, it was actually pretty vibrant. You know, and I think it's become a little obsolete in recent years. You know, attendance is down, whatever. But, you know, the game, well, here's one thing I don't understand. I'm not going to really pretend to understand, but Luis Gil, who had zero command, I mean, he just couldn't. His slider was awful last night. And I didn't realize this. I know he was becoming a little more reliant on the slider, but listen to this, Al. In his first 17 games, right, he threw his slider 17% of the time.
Okay.
All right. In his last five, he's gone to 40%. Interesting. Like, that's a fairly radical flip in terms of reliance. I just find that interesting.
If there's something to it, keeping his arm.
No, because I think
fresh.
The slider is among the more taxing pitchers in baseball, actually.
But he's throwing it less.
He's throwing it more.
Oh, he's throwing it
the
more.
The last five, he's thrown at 40%. The previous 17 starts, he threw it 17% of the time.
Okay. So he's throwing it more.
Yeah, it's almost counterintuitive. If, like, you try to preserve his arm, you would flip that. That's number one, but whatever. I mean, they see something that they like, and I know it's a good wipeout pitch, but he didn't have command last night. I think what bothers me most is that the Yankees start out, you know, walk, walk, double, boom, bad team automatically on the ropes, and, you know, it rears its ugly head sometimes still with this team where they just have the right situation with a couple of outs, productive outs, to tack on 2-3 more runs. God forbid you send one in the gap and you score 2 more, 3 more, and you bury a team and you bludgeon them in the first inning. I still really like this Yankees team. I am very bullish on this Yankees team. But I just wonder about those situational spots in October. They're not fully rectified yet.
Yeah, well, that's the problem. It's why I could never. I don't care about the 5-game win streak that seemed to change everybody's mind back. You know, the Yankees have one of the best records in baseball. Going into yesterday, two teams had 70 wins. Yankees and O's tied atop the AL East. So I get it. Nobody's saying they're a bad team. However, they did play like the worst team right next to the Chicago White Sox for 7 weeks. I could not unsee that in just 5 games and a Jazz Chisholm trade. And by the way, Jazz Chisholm is expecting to go undergo an MRI. Did you see that?
I saw it twice. He slid into third. I initially thought he hurt his knee.
Right.
And then when he went face first at home on the ground ball, the hole by Volpe, base hit.
It was a great slide to get in. It was a great play.
Yeah. I could see him in the dugout. They had him. He was kind of wiggling his elbow, his left elbow. So it's his elbow?
He's scheduled to undergo an MRI on his left elbow today in Chicago. Anyway, there were 3 things for me from last night. Now, you're not going to go nuts just because they lost the game, but they did get spanked by the White Sox, which is just hard to fathom. And it's the same old thing. Would you have serious concerns about Luis Gil after last night, or at least some concerns?
Serious concerns is strong. He had zero command, though. Okay. And so I want to know why.
Right, so there's a little...
He looked like a high school kid trying to... No, I don't mean the velocity. Right. He looked like a high school kid who just didn't know where his slider or curve was going. He was missing the zone by a foot.
And that happens with him on occasion, where even though he could go 5 or 6 scoreless, he's going to walk a ton of guys.
Yeah.
There are at least some concerns with Gil.
Yeah, a little.
Behind Cole and Billy, he's going to be a lockdown number 2. Minimal, but still, not the biggest takeaway from last night. Look at the bullpen. Bullpen imploding. Is that a concern overall?
I mean, they left De La Rosa out there, take one for the team, obviously, take it on the chin. And they were pretty tapped out because they used their bullpen, and they show the chart every game. That's why you needed Hill to go deep, in a long-winded way of addressing it. Am I worried about the bullpen?
I mean, Leiter got lit up the day before.
He gave a couple of home runs. I still think the bullpen is fine.
Okay.
Not a lot more than
agreed.
That, but it's okay. I'm okay with it.
It's not great. It's not going to be a strength. It you know, could be useful. But I still would have mild concerns about that. And then the biggest one, you touched on it. Like, I just don't get it. How we're still going to trust Stanton, Austin Wells, who's been good, and to me, been the difference maker.
Oh, yeah.
The emergence of Austin Wells has changed the feel of the Yankee
lineup. Did you see his OPS in the last 21 games?
No,
it's like 990. They put the stat up last night.
I think I might have seen that. He was hitting like 300, good. Something like that. Okay.
Yes.
So the emergence of Austin Wells, but we still don't know what he's going to be.
Yeah, lefty's tough thing for him
still. Gleyber Torres, you trust him? And Stanton. No. And I don't trust Stanton. Yeah, when he runs into one, he hits missiles. I get it. But other times he looks lost.
Mm-hmm.
So those guys, Stanton, Wells, Torres, at least one or two of them are going to have to produce, regardless of what Soto and Judge do in front of them. They're going to have to produce at some point. And I just don't trust them to do it consistently enough. That's
got to get Dominguez up here. I said it yesterday.
Well, that could be the game
changer.
Got to
get him up here.
That could be the game changer because that might be a different story. We don't know. We've seen him for 8 games.
Mm-hmm.
Could he be a consistent bat that you can rely on behind Aaron Judge in the order? I just don't trust Stanton. So
me neither. I don't trust Stanton.
There's this overreaction. Oh, the Yankees are back because they're mashing. Yeah, but why? And now if you take Jazz out of the mix, that's another blow because he helped along with the emergence of Wells and the return of Stanton and Gleyber playing much better or a little bit better, at least for a shortened period.
Yeah, since he got benched.
Jazz being here changed the lineup as well.
310.
Yeah, so if he's out, you're back to almost the same thing again. Now, it's a big if and we don't know, but.
So an MRI on his elbow. And he
was, you know, like you said, he was trying to get it loose, it looked like.
It was for sure.
Awkward, and plus he's, you know, fragile.
He's very thin.
Yeah.
But boy, he's good. He's perfect
for
that.
He's fun to watch, isn't he?
His approach last, against a lefty a couple times, just, you know, ripping it to left field, 2-strike approach, just a good advanced approach. Like, he's so interesting. As he gets around winning players and a winning environment and a little more focus and a little more maturity, which I think he's shown a great deal of maturity so far. I think I'm very curious what he's going to be. But if he's out for a while, you're right. It's the same team that we complained about for the last month.
Well, that's the thing. So it's not overreacting to the loss last night, but there are flaws that were again exposed last night by the worst team in baseball. that make you wonder about this team, where you can't just have a full belief that, hey, you know what, they're going to go and win the World Series this year.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
It'll be a 1-1 to Judge. The pitch swung on and hit. Deep center field. Trout on the run. Aaron Judge, number 50.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, PT and Sal back on The Fan. It is 11:45. Get back to these calls, and we're reacting to a really good conversation that Boomer and Gio had with Robert Sala this morning, and also we start to weave in some of the Yankee stuff from last night. Again, it's such a long season, you can't go nuts about this, but there really were three elements from the game last night that really malfunctioned that, you know, I mean, could show itself again in the postseason, whether it's starting pitching, whether it's the bullpen, or whether it's situational hitting, which basically encompasses everything.
Right.
You know, so we were just trying to, in the pecking order of worried, establish which is most worrisome.
Yeah,
sound
it's not just the loss to the White Sox, which basically means nothing, even though they got pasted by them. It's more that these have been things that have been flaws for the Yankees for the majority of the season, or at least the 7-week stretch where they were bad, and you know they reared their ugly head last night. I definitely think the lineup one is the most concerning, because even if you have Soto and Judge getting on base and clicking on all cylinders, the guys behind them are gonna have to make teams pay, and they just don't do it consistently enough. Even if they just had one, maybe it can be Dominguez, one bat
bring
that can
up.
Make you pay consistently enough.
That's, so you know the old line from Dumb and Dumber: pick them up,
bring them up.
Let me get Sal in Garfield, BT and Sal on The Fan. Sal, what's going on, bud?
Hey guys, how are you today?
What's up, Sal?
Hey, buddy, we're good.
I've been saying this for a long time now that this team consistently underperforms under Cashman and Boone. I'm one of those guys that believe they both have to go, along with Gleyber Torres. Since they got rid of Gerard, there's no accountability. It's all kumbaya. I call my friend Joe Beningo every Saturday because I'm usually working this time. And I just say, you know, this is ridiculous. Now it's the same. It's like Groundhog Day with the Yankees.
Sal, let me ask you a question, Sal. Now, you've voiced these gripes to us. I haven't heard you do it with Joe, but I certainly believe you. I know where you stand. And I'm not even saying that you're wrong, but do you really think, I don't, but do you really think that this team feels like all the other teams that failed?
Yes.
I disagree. I don't feel that way right now.
In the beginning of the season when they were getting shut out so many times, they had 5-6 shutouts in the first months of the season. They're not a good team.
They're not a good team. They got more wins than anybody.
Yeah, again, I had this argument with one of the guys at the station.
Okay.
I don't care if they win 101 games every year. It's not about participation awards. It's about winning championships.
Well, I agree with that, Sal, but we can't cross that bridge until you get through the regular season bridge. And right now, the Yankees are having an awesome regular season. It's been a little disjointed and uneven, but so's Baltimore. You know, so's the Dodgers with Betts being down for a long time. And some other teams, the Phillies, the Braves, come on.
But those teams have not played like, and I haven't, I don't have the exact record. The Yankees were the second worst team in baseball for a 7-week stretch.
Yep.
Only second to a historically maybe the worst team in baseball history, going to surpass the 62 Mets, the Chicago White Sox. Did the other teams fall off to that level? Like the Phillies haven't been very good, you know, Dodgers, whatever. But did those teams have that period? I'm not saying 2 bad weeks or 3 bad. I'm saying 7 weeks consistently. Before that, the Yankees were looking like they were unbeatable. Then they go into the tank for 7 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
That's too inconsistent.
I know it is, and I'm not saying that I like it, but what I'm also saying, to get to the 70 wins, and I don't know, did anybody get the 70 last time? Maybe I'm missing somebody.
Yeah,
but
Cleveland.
The Guardians did.
Well, so the Yankees and Orioles were the two tied.
I know that those were the two, so the Guardians joined them. Okay, so now three teams have 70 wins. Think about the
Dodgers, too. Dodgers got one last night.
Oh, Betts played the outfield last night.
He homered, right? In his first game back, I believe.
I don't think it was his first at-bat, though, but he did go yard.
Wasn't his first game? Didn't he get activated?
Yeah. And he played the outfield. Yeah. And he's been playing the infield, as you know. Anyway, to get to 70 wins, one of four teams there right now in the middle of August, I understand that's a nice level of achievement. It also means nothing down the road in terms of October prowess, because we've seen other Yankee teams win 99 games back in 2022 and get, you know, absolutely abused by the Astros and barely beat the Guardians, and they probably should have lost that series. But the point being, I know that the other teams that are good did not drop to the depths of the Yankees, right? I think we could all agree. Because when you're with the White Sox, I mean, for seven weeks.
Okay. I mean, that's as bad as it gets.
I agree. But then what does it speak to the Yankees not once but twice elevating to such a high level to still get to 70 wins? I think the Yankees' high point has been higher than any other team in baseball. I think their low point has also been lower than anybody outside of the White Sox. So what does it really mean? I don't know. Probably somewhere in between.
Right.
But are we going to choose to react to just the bad stuff or also incorporate all the good stuff?
I think that they're tough to judge, but I would just go based off the inconsistency, which to me is a red flag. When you're as inconsistent as that, when the Yankees are a bully team. They've always been like that. When they're scoring a bunch of runs, everybody's hitting. It looks like they cannot be beat. And then even against the bad teams you saw last night, if you know guys are getting on, they still can't drop them in or have any kind of consistency, whether it's hitting in the clutch, whether it's the guys behind Judge and Soto, that shouldn't be that different. You look at the numbers, where the win total is, what the run differential is, still the best in baseball. Those would tell you this team is better than it seems if you watch them on a regular basis. But if you watch them on a regular basis, they have major flaws. I'm not saying the other teams don't.
Mm-hmm.
But when the Yankees are bad, they look awful. When they're good, they look like they can't be beat.
Let's get Carmen in Linden, New Jersey. What's going on, Carmen? How are you?
Hey, good morning, guys. Hey. I'm fine. I wish the Yankees were fine. I just want to say one thing about what the three things that you and Sal mentioned with the Yankees. Definitely the starting pitching is going to be a concern come playoff time. They're making the playoffs. Definitely the bullpen is going to be a concern. But I think Sal hit the biggest point. How do you play the Chicago White Sox and in the first five innings leave 12 men on base, an average of more than two men per inning, with the only guy with a single being judged that knocked in one run? You had a chance. How do you not put them away in the first five innings so you can't boost the pitcher's confidence, who absolutely should have been put away in the first five innings? Okay, the first inning, second inning, even Susan, I listened to the radio. Mm-hmm. I listened to Susan even made the mention in about the second inning, after they had left four men on base, or maybe the third, she said, "I hope this doesn't come back to haunt them." Situational hitting.
Yep.
Not.
They said the same. By the way, they said the same thing on TV. I appreciate the call. You're not wrong. I mean, I don't think we needed Susan to say it, or if Garton was to say it over the weekend, or whomever. I just watched the game. I mean, Yankees were having too many empty at-bats, guys on base. And here's the thing about when you play
two for 18.
No, it was embarrassing. It was ugly, Sal.
It's hard to judge that because those things can be, you know, fickle, inconsistent. All right, well, one night they didn't have it. What are you going to do?
Did you have three lineouts or you have three, you know, 12 punchouts? A little context, but I got it.
Maybe good pitching. Two for eight, young last night.
Yeah. I think he was second start ever, I think.
2 for 18 against the worst team in baseball with runners in scoring
position. That's pitiful.
Like, that's alarming.
That was gross. Pop-ups. And that absolutely bothers me. But I think that the reaction to the loss is a little misguided. I think it's like, all right, the White Sox, they're terrible. You should just come in and make yourself very comfortable and basically wipe your feet on the White Sox and en route to a 3-game sweep and beat them aggregately 27-6. I understand what you should do, but it's baseball. And I think that this Yankees team is as talented as anybody. I still think that. I think that this Yankees team has as much of a chance as anybody to get to the World Series.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to let one bad game just deter me from that.
Yeah, I just think the pitching is going to be better elsewhere in the postseason. And I also, based on postseason.
From where, though? From Baltimore.
Well, definitely Seattle.
Okay.
For starters.
Okay.
Cleveland.
All right.
I mean, maybe Cleveland bullpen. You know, there's other. Now, do I trust Cleveland to beat the Yankees in a series? I mean, again, I have to see that to believe it, just because I've been scarred from what I've seen historically. I don't trust anybody in the Central to beat the Yankees. But, man, look, maybe Kansas City could be dangerous. Who the hell knows? But you look at.
The Astros are in first place, by the way.
The Astros have been, you know, Yankees bugaboo. Obviously, that's been an issue. I don't believe the way the Yankees are built, bully-like offense, absolute masters. I don't believe that leads to success in the postseason. Doesn't mean it can't.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean it hasn't at times before. You know, the Braves won a World Series hitting a bunch of home runs. Home runs are good, but consistency and being able to drive runs in consistently helps you win in the postseason over the long course of the different series.
Yep.
And I think the Yankees are a team that will mash you one night, which leads to their run differential being the best in baseball, and on other nights get shut out. It goes back to the home opener. We talked about that. They look great on the road trip. They come home against the Blue Jays. They lay an egg.
Mm-hmm.
They're too inconsistent. Like, if you score three or four runs, fine. To go from 12 runs to two runs or 12 runs to no runs,
mm-hmm.
that's not...
Let me ask you this. Yeah. I know we got a break. Let's strip away the noise, the energy, the Yankees yeah. this, the expectations. How inconsistent can you truly be when you're one of four teams with 70 wins?
I know, but we saw them be one of the worst teams in a league for 7 weeks. It's a great question. Same thing with the run difference. Like, those stats do mean something. The win total does mean something, but you watch this team and you tell... Look at the Yankees a couple years ago. We talked about the first half, everybody comparing them to the 98 Yankees. Then the second half, they were awful. Their record was still good at the end of the year, but they went into the postseason. You just saw it wasn't there. I'm with you that this is a more talented team. Obviously, Soto changes a lot.
Yeah.
And that they have a shot to be a World Series team. I just don't fundamentally believe in the way that they're built, specifically with Stanton hitting behind Judge and Soto, and their pitching, whether it be the bullpen, whether it be their starting rotation. I don't believe that they're built to succeed in the postseason.
Got to get the kid up here. Got to get Dominguez up here. Get him in here and get him in the middle of all this. 888-808-1019. BT and Sal on the Fan.
Happened. You talk about it on the Fan.
It'll be a 1-1 to Judge. The pitch swung on and hit. Deep center field. Trout on the run. Aaron Judge, number 50.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, PT and Sal back on the Fan. It is 11:45. Get back to these calls, and we're reacting to a really good conversation that Boomer and Gio had with Robert Sala this morning. And also, we start to weave in some of the Yankee stuff from last night. Again, it's such a long season, you can't go nuts about this, but there really were three elements from the game last night that really malfunctioned that, you know, I mean, could show itself again in the postseason, whether it's starting pitching, whether it's the bullpen, or whether it's situational hitting, which basically encompasses everything.
Right.
You know, so we were just trying to, in the pecking order of worried, establish which is most worrisome.
Yeah,
sound
it's not just the loss to the White Sox, no. which basically means nothing, even though they got pasted by them. It's more that these have been things that have been flaws for the Yankees for the majority of the season, or at least the 7 week stretch where they were bad, and you know they reared their ugly head last night. I definitely think the lineup one is the most concerning, because even if you have Soto and Judge getting on base and clicking on all cylinders, the guys behind them are gonna have to make teams pay, and they just don't do it consistently enough. Even if they just had one, maybe it can be Dominguez, one bat
bring
that can
up.
Make you pay consistently enough.
Let's see, you know the old line from Dumb and Dumber, pick them up!
Bring them up!
Let me get Sal in Garfield, BT and Sal on the Fan. Sal, what's going on, bud?
Hey, guys, how are you today?
What's up, Sal?
Hey, buddy, we're good.
I've been saying this for a long time now, that this team consistently underperforms under Cashman and Boone. I'm one of those guys that believe they both have to go, along with Gleyber Torres. Since they got rid of Gerard, there's no accountability. It's all kumbaya. I call my friend Joe Beningo every Saturday because I'm usually working this time. And I just say, you know, this is ridiculous. Now, it's the same. It's like Groundhog Day with the Yankees.
Sal, let me ask you a question, yeah. Sal. Now, you've voiced these gripes to us. I haven't heard you do it with Joe, but I certainly believe you. I know where you stand. And I'm not even saying that you're wrong, but do you really think, I don't, but do you really think that this team feels like all the other teams that failed?
Yes.
I disagree. I don't feel that way right now.
In the beginning of the season when they were getting shut out so many times, they had 5-6 shutouts in the first months of the season. Huh? They're not a good team.
They're a good team. They got more wins than anybody.
Yeah, again, I had this argument with one of the guys at the station.
Okay.
I don't care if they win 101 games every year. It's not about participation awards. It's about winning championships.
Well, I agree with that, Sal, but we can't cross that bridge until you get through the regular season bridge. And right now, the Yankees are having an awesome regular season. It's been a little disjointed and uneven, but so's Baltimore. You know, so's the Dodgers with Betts being down for a long time. And some other teams, the Phillies, the Braves, come on.
But those teams have not played like, and I haven't, I don't have the exact record. The Yankees were the second worst team in baseball for a 7-week stretch.
Yep.
Only second to a historically maybe the worst team in baseball history, going to surpass the 62 Mets, the Chicago White Sox. Did the other teams fall off to that level? Like, the Phillies haven't been very good. You know, Dodgers, whatever. But did those teams have that period? I'm not saying two bad weeks or three bad. I'm saying 7 weeks consistently. Before that, the Yankees were looking like they were unbeatable. Then they go in to the tank for 7 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
That's too inconsistent.
I know it is, and I'm not saying that I like it, but what I'm also saying, to get to the 70 wins, and I don't know, did anybody get the 70 last time? Maybe I'm missing somebody.
Yeah,
but
Cleveland.
The Guardians did.
Well, so the Yankees and Orioles were the two tied.
I know that those were Cleveland the two, so the Guardians joined them. Okay, so now three teams have 70 wins. Think about the
Dodgers, too. Dodgers got one last night.
Oh, Betts played the outfield last night.
He homered, right? In his first game back, I believe.
Well, I don't think it was his first at-bat, though, but he did go yard.
Wasn't his first game? Didn't he get activated?
Yeah. And he played the outfield. Yeah. And he's been playing the infield, as you know. Anyway, to get to 70 wins, one of four teams there right now in the middle of August, I understand that's a nice level of achievement. It also means nothing down the road in terms of October prowess, because we've seen other Yankee teams win 99 games back in 2022 and get, you know, absolutely abused by the Astros and barely beat the Guardians, and they probably should have lost that series. But the point being, I know that the other teams that are good did not drop to the depths of the Yankees, right? I think we could all agree, because when you're with the White Sox, I mean, for seven weeks,
that's as bad as it gets.
I agree. But then what does it speak to the Yankees not once but twice elevating to such a high level to still get to 70 wins? I think the Yankees' high point has been higher than any other team in baseball. I think their low point has also been lower than anybody outside of the White Sox. So what does it really mean? I don't know. Probably somewhere in between.
Right.
But are we going to choose to react to just the bad stuff or also incorporate all the good stuff?
I think that they're tough to judge, but I would just go based off the inconsistency, which to me is a red flag. When you're as inconsistent as that, when the Yankees are a bully team. They've always been like that. When they're scoring a bunch of runs, everybody's hitting, it looks like they cannot be beat. And then even against the bad teams you saw last night, if, you know, guys are getting on, they still can't drop them in or have any kind of consistency, whether it's hitting in the clutch, whether it's the guys behind Judge and Soto, that shouldn't be that different. You look at the numbers, where the win total is, what the run differential is, still the best in baseball. Those would tell you this team is better than it seems if you watch them on a regular basis. But if you watch them on a regular basis, they have major flaws. I'm not saying the other teams don't.
Mm-hmm.
But when the Yankees are bad, they look awful. When they're good, they look like they can't be beaten.
Let's get Carmen in Linden, New Jersey. What's going on, Carmen? How are you?
Hey, good morning, guys. Hey. I'm fine. I wish the Yankees were fine. I just want to say one thing about what the three things that you and Sal mentioned with the Yankees. Definitely the starting pitching is going to be a concern come playoff time. They're making the playoffs. Definitely the bullpen is going to be a concern. But I think Sal hit the biggest point. How do you play the Chicago White Sox and in the first five innings leave 12 men on base, an average of more than two men per inning, with the only guy with a single being judged and knocked in one run? You had a chance. How do you not put them away in the first five innings? So you can't boost the pitcher's confidence, who absolutely should have been put away in the first five innings. Okay, the first inning, second inning. Even Susan, I listened to the radio. Mm-hmm. I listened to Susan even made the mention in about the second inning, after they had left four men on base, or maybe the third. She said, I hope this doesn't come back to haunt them. Situational hitting.
Yep.
By
the way, they said the same thing on TV. I appreciate the call. You're not wrong. I mean, I don't think we needed Susan to say it, or if Carton was to say it over the weekend, or whomever. I just watch the game. I mean, Yankees were having too many empty at bats, guys on base. And here's the thing about when you play
For 18.
No, it was embarrassing. It was ugly, Sal.
It's hard to judge that because those things can be, you know, fickle, inconsistent. All right, well, one night they didn't have it. What are you going to do?
Did you have three lineouts or you have three, you know, 12 punch outs? Right, like, there's a little context, but I got it.
Maybe good pitching, but two for 18.
That kid was young last night. Yeah. I think he was second start ever, I think.
2 for 18 against the worst team in baseball with runners in scoring.
That's pitiful.
Like, that's alarming.
That was gross. Pop ups. And that absolutely bothers me. But I think that the reaction to the loss is a little misguided. I think it's like, all right, the White Sox, they're terrible. You should just come in and make yourself very comfortable and basically wipe your feet on the White Sox and route to a 3-game sweep and beat them aggregately 27-6. I understand what you should do, but it's baseball. And I think that this Yankees team is as talented as anybody. I still think that. I think that this Yankees team has as much of a chance as anybody to get to the World Series.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to let one bad game just deter me from that.
Yeah, I just think the pitching is going to be better elsewhere in the postseason. And I also, based on postseason...
From where, though? From Baltimore?
Well, definitely Seattle.
Okay.
For starters.
Okay.
Cleveland.
All right.
I mean, maybe Cleveland bullpen. You know, there's other... Now, do I trust Cleveland to beat the Yankees in a series? I mean, again, I have to see that to believe it, just because I've been scarred from what I've seen historically. I don't trust anybody in the Central to beat the Yankees. But, and look, maybe Kansas City could be dangerous. Who the hell knows? But you look at...
The Astros are in first place, by the way.
And the Astros have been... You know, Yankees bugaboo. Obviously, that's been an issue. I don't believe the way the Yankees are built, bully-like offense, absolute masters, I don't believe that leads to success in the postseason. Doesn't mean it can't.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean it hasn't at times before. You know, the Braves won a World Series hitting a bunch of home runs. Home runs are good, but consistency and being able to drive runs in consistently helps you win in the postseason over the long course of the different series.
Yep.
And I think the Yankees are a team that will mash you one night, which leads to their run differential being the best in baseball, and on other nights get shut out. It goes back to the home opener. We talked about that. They look great on the road trip. They come home against the Blue Jays. They lay an egg.
Mm-hmm.
They're too inconsistent. Like, if you score 3 or 4 runs, fine. To go from 12 runs to 2 runs or 12 runs to no runs, that's not...
Let me ask you this. Yeah. I know we got a break. Let's strip away the noise, the energy, the Yankees this, the expectations. How inconsistent can you truly be when you're one of 4 teams with 70 wins?
I know, but we saw them be one of the worst teams in a league for 7 weeks. It's a great question. Same thing with the run difference. Like, those stats do mean something. The win total does mean something, but you watch this team and you tell... Look at the Yankees a couple years ago. We talked about the first half, everybody comparing them to the 98 Yankees. Then the second half, they were awful. Their record was still good at the end of the year, but they went in the postseason. You just saw it wasn't there. I'm with you that this is a more talented team. Obviously, Soto changes a lot.
Yeah.
And that they have a shot to be a World Series team. I just don't fundamentally believe in the way that they're built, specifically with Stanton hitting behind Judge and Soto and their pitching, whether it be the bullpen, whether it be their starting rotation. I don't believe that they're built to succeed in the postseason.
Got to get the kid up here. Got to get Dominguez up here. Get him in here and get him in the middle of all this. 888-808-1019. BT and Sal on the Fan.